Today's guest, social media and online content strategist, Jay Bear. You're listening to the Eagles Talent Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Eagles Talent Speakers Bureau, for speakers who inspire, educate, and entertain. You can find us online at eaglestalent.com. Remember, you can listen to our podcast on our site, eaglestalent.com, or subscribe to it on iTunes by simply typing Eagles Talent in the search. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Eagles Talent Podcast, and I'm your host, Sheldon Senek. Does your company incorporate a social media strategy? Are you using the right social media platform? Or will social media bring you business? I sat down with Jay Bear, acclaimed keynote speaker and author of The Now Revolution, to ask him these questions and more. After all, if your organization is investing time and money in social media or considering entering the game, you'll want to hear his advice on creating a sound strategy. Jay Bear, welcome to the Eagles Talent Podcast. So glad you can join us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure to be here. Looking forward to it.
Jay, you began as a political consultant helping to manage campaigns for governor, U.S. Senate, and president. How did you go from there to one of the most recognized social media strategists?
Yeah, that was when I was just a boy and was not very smart about things like this. I was a political science major and started as a political consultant, and I still really like electoral politics. Mm-hmm. What I like about electoral politics is its sort of light switch nature. At the end of the day, you either got elected or you didn't. There's not a lot of gray area in that world, and I liked that. The challenge is that when you're not running a campaign in that world, typically you're doing something else, lobbying or some other form of public affairs. And I didn't really like that part of it. So I moved into more traditional marketing and thought, you know, if I can get somebody elected, I can sell soap. So I worked as a marketing director for a few years for some big companies, and then I made a very silly decision. My boss at one point left, was promoted actually, and the new guy who came in was really not very sharp, and I was still pretty young and was disenfranchised by that, and left the company. And so I started to work for the government. I worked for the Arizona Department of Juvenile Corrections.
Wow.
For about 4 months. And my job was to give tours of juvenile prison, which is just as awesome as I've made it sound.
Right.
And so I did that for like 4 months. And literally, this is a true story. They put me in charge. I was the chairperson of a 13-person business card redesign committee.
Okay.
And I thought, you know, this seems to have more process involved than is my nature as sort of a serial entrepreneur. So I took my leave of government and have not ever looked back. And what happened was some friends of mine from college had started the very first internet company in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And they said, hey, this internet company thing is starting to take off, and we need somebody who knows marketing, and we don't know marketing. I said, well, that's good, because I don't know what you're talking about when you say the word internet, because this is circa 1993.
Right.
So before we even had a browser, quite literally. So I said, I'll do anything to not give another landfill or prison tour. So I went over there and found myself as a partner in an internet company without ever having been on the internet. So I was there for a few years, and we ended up growing it, and it was a big, wild success story, and did a couple other things here or there, and then started a series of digital marketing agencies where I helped lots of big corporate clients across the country with web strategy and email and search engine optimization and mm-hmm. banner ads and all of those things. And from there, I sort of gravitated onto the social media side of it a few years ago. And I really like social media because, to me, it combines the two things that I really like, which is the measurability of digital marketing, right? Mm-hmm. The ability to keep score in ways that's difficult for print and radio and outdoor, et cetera.
Right.
So the measurability I like a lot, and sort of the relationship side of it. Social media to me is a lot like retail politics. Mm-hmm. It's a lot like going door to door, but you're going keyboard to keyboard. And so I like the confluence of those two things, and it's worked out really well.
So social media has caused a real shift for businesses in the last few years, and we're still evolving. You wrote in your latest book, The Now Revolution, you say, the future of business is not in measured, scrutinized response or carefully planned initiatives. Businesses will soon be about near instantaneous response. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we're seeing it already. Every customer is a reporter now. That's mm-hmm. the big move on the chessboard. Social media isn't really a technology shift, although it is, but it's more than that. It's a cultural shift. It's an era where customers have skin in the game in ways that they never had previously. Mm-hmm. I can punish or praise a brand in 5 seconds from my pants, which is amazing, right? I didn't used to be able to do that.
Right.
So businesses can't sit around the conference table and say, somebody sent a tweet about us. How should we handle that?
Right.
Because by the time you send out the meeting request to get everybody together, it's over. You've missed it.
Mm-hmm.
A great example of that, we don't have it in the book because it came out just after the book was launched, but mm-hmm. you may remember the Kenneth Cole story from April, I think it was, of this year, when the fashion designer Kenneth Cole, his own personal account, you know, at Kenneth Cole, said something along the lines of, and I'm going to paraphrase here,
mm-hmm.
The people in Egypt are rioting because they love our new spring collection. And this is during the Cairo riots that brought down their government, which was interpreted by the social media community as a bit crass.
Right.
And so he got buried by negative tweets, and people are like, this is crazy, you're tone deaf, etc.
Right.
Then, of course, the traditional media picks up on it because they use social media for all of their sources now. So it becomes, you know, New York Times, NBC, Fox News, all these kind of things. Then a couple of parody Twitter accounts got created to make fun of him.
Right.
Then he eventually apologized and recanted and said, yeah, you're right, that was really not a good thing to say. The entirety of that circumstance, from when he sent the tweet to people getting jumping on him, media getting involved, media reporting the story, parody accounts, and him apologizing, was 11 hours.
Wow.
There's no such thing as a news cycle anymore. It's a river, not a series of lakes.
There are tons of books out there on how to do social media. But this book of yours takes a slightly different angle. Would you say that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a hands-on keyboard workbook. That was very intentional.
So, question: you know, why are most companies afraid of making the plunge into incorporating social media, and for that matter, maybe even new technology?
Well, in social media in particular, it's because when you agree to answer the social telephone, which is the paradigm that we talk about in the book quite a bit, when you agree and sort of make that compact with your customers that says, yes, we're going to adopt these new media as ways that you can legitimately interact with us,
mm-hmm.
you are giving power to those customers. You are agreeing to a measure of response and a measure of transparency that historically has not been required of business of any size. And that is really scary, because most companies at their core, at the DNA level, are not social. Most companies at their core, at their DNA level, don't really care about their customers. They say they do, but they don't really.
Mm-hmm.
And social media really lets the rich get richer in that regard. Many of the companies that we laud for being good at social media, quote unquote, are companies that we look at as pinnacles of sort of customer service and customer experience, and companies that typically are known to care about their customers in the real world. And that's not an accident.
So what are some of the myths of social media in companies?
Oh, there's so many. There's a lot of myths. In fact, I have in one of my presentations, I have a whole piece on the myths of social media. One is that social media is inexpensive. I hear that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, geez, Facebook's free, so right on. And it's not inexpensive. It's just different expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You're trading media dollars for labor dollars. It's extraordinarily time intensive to do social media well, and companies often overlook that.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes companies believe that the goal is to be good at social media, And the goal is not to be good at social media. The goal is to be good at business because of social media. And sometimes we misplace that. We get all excited about, look how many Facebook fans we have and how many Twitter followers and how many blog readers, et cetera.
And that doesn't
equal revenue out the back end, right?
Right. You know, that brings up a question. You know, do you think that, companies kind of get too hyped up on a specific tool or using the tool of social media instead of a strategy?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what I do every day on the consulting side of my business, is help people understand that social media supports business objectives. It's not a siloed enterprise. It's not about the tools or the technology at all. It's what we say is you need to focus on how to be social and worry less about how to do social media, which is why the book is not, you know, a hands-on keyboard, step one, turn on computer, step two, go to twitter.com type of a book.
We have Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and now Google+. What are some of the differences with each of these audiences?
Well, colloquially, what we say, and there is a kernel of truth to it, which is why this phrase gets passed along quite a bit, is that LinkedIn is for people that you know. Mm-hmm. Facebook is for people that you used to know. And Twitter is for people that you want to know. And there is definitely a kernel of truth to all of those. Google Plus is too new to have made the list. But, you know, you find a lot of different types of connectivity and different types of relationships. Part of it, though, is just based on adoption. Mm-hmm. So as you just did in the question, you lumped Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Google Plus together, as is often the case.
Right.
But when you look at it demographically, 52% of Americans ages 12 and older who have an internet connection, which is almost everyone but the Amish. I love them.
No offense, right?
52% of Americans 12 and up with an internet connection have a Facebook account.
Right.
So more people in this country are on Facebook than are not on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter, comparatively speaking, is 8%.
Hmm.
So people always say Facebook and Twitter as if they are two sides of the same coin, but demographically,
sure,
that's not at all true. And LinkedIn is right around that same percentage with Twitter, somewhere in that ballpark, maybe a little higher than Twitter, and Google Plus is less, is sort of in fourth place, actually probably fifth place as we record this. I believe that MySpace still has more active members than Google Plus, but probably not for long. Certainly, however, LinkedIn, of course, more business-oriented.
Right.
Twitter, more news oriented. It's much more of a news service than anything else now.
Yeah, I was going to say,
more personal.
I was going to say, yeah, it seems more like an AP wire anymore, filled with headlines and links.
A terrific observation. It has, and I talk about this a lot in my presentations, that, you know, social media in companies sort of requires experiential learning. You know, you can read all the books you want and read my blog and things like that, but
right,
ultimately you have to roll around in it, and that's because social media changes all the time, and a lot of the rules in social media are unwritten.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter is the best example of that, because when it first came out, it was very personal.
Mm-hmm.
And what you hear a lot of social media resistors say, I'm sure you've heard this, people say, and it's for some reason always this statement, I don't want to know what you had for lunch.
Exactly, yeah.
People always say that. Like, it's weird. Like, that has become a universal objection.
It feels such an old school thought.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
But to some degree, it rings true, because when Twitter first came out, that's exactly what happened on Twitter all the time. It was
right,
very much in fact, the little, you know, instruction above the blinking cursor on Twitter used to be, what are you doing? And so as a result, what you had was, I'm eating lunch right now, and I'm petting my cat, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that was how Twitter really first became popularized. But over time, somewhat gradually, Twitter has become much more about news. It really is,
right,
you know, headline news on crack. It's I think this is interesting, link. I think this is interesting, link. I think this is
right,
interesting. The percentage of tweets that contain links has skyrocketed in the last 18 to 24 months. So it really is not a personal reflection of what you're doing at that time anymore. It's become sort of a global water cooler, which is a much different place than where it started out.
Well, in Facebook, didn't they kind of begin with the so-and-so is, and then you had to kind of fill in that blank, and they kind of did with that as well, I think.
Well, it certainly was intended initially to be focused upon relationships that you actually have in
right,
means, right? It was intended to be the digital manifestation of your three-dimensional relationships, and that has now, of course, expanded. And in many cases, people have lots of Facebook connections with people that they've never met. Although it's still interesting that Facebook is definitely the network out there where you still see people being very reluctant to connect with folks that they don't actually know. My wife, for example, only has friends on Facebook who she's actually friends with, which to me seems crazy, but I understand where she's coming from. And I wrote a very long blog post that was well received in my world about this notion of, you know, real versus fake friends, etc.
Right.
And it really stirred up a lot of controversy in the industry. And she read it and said, "I don't get it." I said, "What do you mean you don't get it?" Because her friends online are her friends offline.
Right.
But in my case, I've got friends offline, but I also have, you know, 50,000 people who follow me on Twitter and however many on Facebook, et cetera. And so there's tiers of relationships that people who embrace social media have that people who are sort of more on the outside looking in don't. It's an interesting scenario we find ourselves in.
And I find with Facebook, at least for myself, that is one area where my work world does blend with my home life. And both, you know, I know, you know, speakers and other, you know, people we work with, and plus them, all my family and friends. And it's amazing how well the blend is, you know. It's amazing.
Well, it's easier to do that now, too, that Google Plus started it and Facebook copied them right away, as their typical game plan, that, that you can now segment your messaging on Facebook or Google Plus, you know, by network. So you can send something on Facebook very easily without having to go through a million clicks to say, "Look, I only want to share this crazy photo of me with my friends as opposed to my boss."
Right.
and those kind of things. And that makes Facebook and Google Plus more appropriate for a broader swath of relationships.
And I'm glad you brought Google Plus again, because I'm especially fascinated about Google Plus and how it's going to be incorporated into things like Google searches, and how this can be, I think, a real game changer possibly for businesses wanting to show up at the top of searches.
Well, it already is.
Yeah.
What happens in Google Plus already impacts Google search results. Mm-hmm. And what most people don't know is that what happens in Facebook really doesn't. Mm-hmm. And what happens in Twitter used to, but doesn't anymore because their relationship agreement expired. Mm-hmm. So really the reason why Google started Google Plus is so that they would have a source of social signals to bake into the search algorithm. Mm-hmm. So while Google Plus has done very well within the sort of tech cognoscenti, you know, they got to 40 million users faster than any web service in the history of the world.
Right.
But it's been difficult for them so far to really push it much farther, right? So I use Google Plus every day.
Right.
My wife doesn't, and my mom's never heard of it. So it, you know, if you're going to go challenge Facebook, you got to get to my mom eventually.
Right.
And they haven't done that in any meaningful way. But what I have said in a number of forums and written about extensively is that if anybody can do that, it's Google, because there's so many other things that Google produces that we use every day. Gmail, Maps, Google Search, YouTube, that if they want to incorporate Plus into those other services in a meaningful, attractive way, eventually we will start to use Google Plus in a larger, broader capacity. The problem is that they are not the kind of company that really does that well.
Right.
They're not really a platform company. They're a series of products companies. Mm-hmm. And so culturally within Google as an organization, that type of cross-pollination isn't really historically the way they operate. So it's going to be very funny and interesting to see how this shakes out.
You know, absolutely, because I think generally people, when they go into Google, they kind of look at them like this policing web service that when they Google something, they'll get the appropriate search results, and then here they are coming in to, you know, Google Plus and incorporating, changing search results on you. So, you know, I'm equally as curious to see what's going to happen in the future. So.
And the business pages should be out soon. You know, they're going to start having the Google Plus business pages the same way you have Facebook pages for business, and that's going to be the next big advance in that category, and see what that's all about.
I'm sure that you know, many business-to-business companies are skeptical. You know, I always keep hearing, how can I get clients or generate leads from using social media tool like Facebook? Are they approaching it the wrong way?
I don't know that they're approaching it the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And I've done a lot of work in B2B for social media. In fact, I'm keynoting the Marketing Sherpa B2B Summit coming up in the next week or so in San Francisco about this topic. And I actually believe, and I mean this, mm-hmm. that social media is more important for B2B than it is for B2C.
Mm-hmm.
Because B2B has a fewer number of customers, so the ability of each individual customer to steer public opinion is magnified. B2B has a good handle on metrics. You know who your customers are because they have to sign paperwork and they have a sales rep and things like that, so mm-hmm. you can track the effectiveness of social media better than you can in B2C. Search is really important, typically in the B2B world, and things like Google search results probably are more important for B2B than they are for Pringles, for example. And search and social media are very much Lone Ranger and Tonto. There's a lot of interplay between those two. So I think social is a huge opportunity for B2B, but it's often a different kind of social. It's not necessarily the primacy of Twitter and Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
For B2B companies, it really is more about blogging and content marketing and thought leadership and doing interesting things along those lines, and then using Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and other places like that to make sure people are aware of the content. So to some mm-hmm. degree, you're using social media to promote your content mm-hmm. first and your company second.
Well, I've even heard you, correct me if I'm wrong, but talk about Facebook as almost like a newsletter 3.0.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I really believe that Facebook and email are strategically and operationally similar.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the people who connect with your company, doesn't matter what kind of company it is. In fact, the newest results show that 84% of people who are friends of a company on Facebook mm-hmm. are current customers.
Right.
Which stands to reason, right? Think about how you use Facebook. You don't like stuff unless you actually like it. Right. In three dimensions. You don't roll around on Facebook randomly and click the like button for companies you've never heard of. Like, why would you do that? What's the upside of that? So in almost every case, it's you have had a positive experience with this company, and now you want to make sure that other people in Facebook and your friends and your connections know that you've had a positive experience.
Mm-hmm.
So you click that like button, or you want to stay, you know, up to date on what that company is doing, et cetera. So in Facebook, we are trying to keep people top of mind who have asked us to do so, and email is the exact same thing.
You know, and I think that people are being a little more thoughtful and clicking that like button as you're talking about, because I think when it first came out, people were making all these crazy pages and everyone was liking everything that came in front of them, was put in front of them. But now I think people are a lot more careful about what and who they like.
There's also a real rise in unlikes as well.
Really? Interesting.
Oh, yeah, on the business level. Because it's just like email, right? I mean, remember, I mean, I am, as I said, I started doing this in 93. So, you know, at the beginning, people are like, oh, you have an email newsletter I can get? Fantastic.
Right.
Right. And now people don't say, gee, I wish I could get more email. That would be awesome. It's quite the opposite. Right.
Right.
So, people are much more judicious about what they sign up for. And even when you do sign up for an email newsletter from a company, if after two or three issues, like, yeah, this isn't for me, you unsubscribe.
Exactly.
And we're seeing the same dynamic starting to occur in Facebook. And that's why it's I feel like I'm an effective consultant and an effective speaker because, to me, I feel like I've seen this movie before. So many things that are happening in social media already happened one or two times in the past during the last internet boom.
Right.
So it's history is doomed to repeat itself.
Well, speaking of speaking, how have you seen social media incorporated into conferences, and how is it changing conferences?
It's funny. As a speaker, you know, we used to always make sure that you were making great eye contact with the audience.
Right.
And now if you're making eye contact, that means they're not tweeting. So maybe you're not saying anything interesting. It's almost exactly the opposite of how it's sort of fascinating. And one of the things that I find really exciting about social media and events is that you can use social media, instead of it being a 1 or 2 day event, it's a 2 or 3 week event, because you're using social media to promote the event, to talk about speakers, to interview speakers, to show blog posts from speakers, to talk about attendees and do all those kind of things
right.
before the event even occurs. Then obviously you've got real-time social media with Twitter and hashtags in particular during the event, and then after the event you've got the sort of tsunami of blog coverage and photos and all these other things that happened at the event. And so it makes the event window much longer, and smart events really capitalize upon that opportunity.
Well, Jay, Thank you so much for being on the podcast, and it's been an extreme pleasure talking with you.
Oh, I loved it. It was great. We'll do it again sometime.
Again, I've been your host, Sheldon Sinek, and you've been listening to the Eagles Talent Podcast.